There was a time when seeing cranes here in the state was kind of a rare occurrence, but through increased awareness and we had some very effective collaborations, crane populations have recovered dramatically, and both Whoopers and Sandhill cranes are real success stories. Ann Lacey with us today to talk about all things cranes. She is the long-term crane research coordinator at the International Crane Foundation, which, is, by the way, if you've never been there, you've got to go. Our family went there and had so much fun. It's the only place in the world, I think, the only place in the world where you can see all the species of cranes in one place. Ann, welcome.
Oh,
and
welcome.
I'm right, am I not?
You are. It's the only place in the world that has all 15 species.
Mm-hmm. And here's the fun part of that. When you're there, you know, they're in this sort of round, kind of walking around in a very large, round.
We call it the pod.
Pod. Okay. Yeah. There's the pod and the
part
and
of
the,
our bird exhibits.
And in every case, the cranes were. Close to the building, close to the center building, but when we walked up and stopped to look at them, they would all come walking right up, yeah. So we'd have them right in front of your nose.
Their feet away from you, and they can look you in the eye.
Yes, they certainly can, and they are. I mean, it's just absolutely a wonderful experience to visit that wonderful, wonderful place.
And
International
today,
Crane
of course,
Foundation.
Being April 15th, everybody realizes, you know, that day comes every year. It's the opening day for the International Crane Foundation on April 15th. So everybody can stop by today.
Stop by today. And, you know, as I said, they are commonplace now.
Yes.
But that really hasn't always been the case, has it?
It has not been. No, Aldo Leopold. Estimated in the 1930s, there might have been only 25 breeding pairs in the whole state.
Boy.
And so we can point to wetlands where there's 25 breeding pairs now, some of the bigger wetlands in Wisconsin. So they are a conservation success story. And we hope to do the same thing with the whooping cranes back in Wisconsin as well.
Boy, I'm telling you, it was really fun. I was out last weekend and with my daughter, with Emily, and we were out early in the morning. It was about probably 5:30 in the morning, and there was a pair of sandhills not far from us, and boy, they were loud and noisy, and it was so much fun to listen.
Yeah, people think of robins and bluebirds as yard birds. Well, cranes can be yard birds as well.
You live in the right spot. Jill and Rhinelander has something. Hi, Jill. Thank you for calling.
Well, good morning. Almost afternoon. I'm calling. Well, I'm assuming it's a pair of sandhills strolling through our yard. We're out very rural. And I'm wondering, they're here every day several times and eating the duck corn and everything. Should we encourage them or discourage them?
Cranes don't need a whole lot of encouragement, I can tell you that. So they're in your yard. It's obvious that you have the kind of habitat that they like, and that might very well be a nesting pair. If you have the bird food of any kind, I would at least try to put it at the back of the yard and don't encourage them to be too close to the house. That we try to discourage that as much as possible. But if you didn't put any food out at all, they would find grubs and worms and snakes and seeds and all sorts of things. So they are very able to take care of themselves even without food.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Ann in Wausau with another interesting question. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I actually have two questions. The first one is, how do you feel about this proposed sandhill crane hunt? And I also would like to know, how do you work with the DNR science program and if that will affect you if that goes away? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
A very timely question. I hope that everybody that's listening was able to go to the Conservation Congress. The sandhill crane vote was up, and it's just an advisory from the DNR board to the legislature about perhaps having a sandhill crane hunt in Wisconsin. The International Crane Foundation is a science-based organization, and to maintain the integrity of all of that science that we do not take a pro or con stance on the hunt itself. But what I can say is I hear from people all the time, very passionate about cranes, one way or the other, both mm-hmm. pro and con. And if you have a feeling about that hunt, if you think that they are better seen through binoculars than a scope, for example, on a gun, I would suggest that you let your legislators know. That is what we recommend. People need to make their voice heard, because this is, it's really about what people would prefer to use that natural resource that Wisconsin has. And so we have data on crane numbers and crop damage and things like that that we can use to put towards some of the arguments that people say that why they want a crane hunt, like it would not help crane crop damage, for example. But I really encourage people to talk to their legislators and tell them how they prefer sandhill cranes.
Mm-hmm. And Keith in Beaver Dam, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. I had a unique experience I'd like to share with you. A couple of years ago, there was a farmer in my area that it was the first field, cornfield taken off, and it seemed like every crane in the county was in that field. Well, yeah. I was just kept looking what chances are of finding a whooping crane in there. And I came home one Friday morning, and here in a flock, there was a white bird, and I looked, and I'd seen the black on it, and it was a whooping crane.
Excellent, excellent. I was going to say the chances are better and better every year that you might see a whooping crane, though. That's great.
Yeah, and he tried to fit in with that flock, and they wanted him no part of that. They wouldn't let him in. Well, I thought, well, lo and behold, no one's going to believe me. Well, that Tuesday, I came by, there he was standing out in the field. And I went home, and I could not find a camera. The batteries were dead.
Of course. The rarest bird in the world.
I had run over by my neighbor. He got a camera. We got a picture of it. I called the Crane Foundation, and they said, email it to them. They said, was there any band or anything on there? And I didn't know, but because I took a picture, you blew it up, and you could see the color band. I forget what color it was. And they were able to tell me when that but was born.
The history, sure.
And it was just a thrill. I want to thrill to my life. It was just fantastic.
Excellent. Yeah, I tell people all the time, you know, I do that with sandhill cranes, too. Just take a glance at their legs, because we also band sandhill cranes as part of the science that we do and study. The most numerous crane in the world. So, yep, whooping cranes are getting more and more every year.
Yeah.
I did have a question, though.
Sure.
I was telling people, very few people knew how rare that bird was, and I was so excited, and everybody's like, well, yeah, you know, I mean, it's like they didn't know. How do we get that information out there? It's, you know, they don't really, that resource, and, you know, because they're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, so you'd like to know how to get that information?
Or get
yeah,
it out to people.
Sure.
Get out to people more information so that they understand that they're just not driving down the highway, and they can look and observe things that, wow, it's pretty cool, you know?
Excellent point, Keith. The website for the partnership, and so ICF is one of many partners that is working to bring the whooping cranes back to the Eastern Flyway, that is bringbackthecranes.org. But we also, on ICF's Facebook page, which you don't need to be a Facebook subscriber to see, Facebook/SavingCranes or savingcranes.org is our website. All of those places will have updates about our work with the whooping crane reintroduction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, Keith, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Question about cranes, or maybe you've got an experience to share. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We have callers online. The email we have is from Jed in Madison. My wife and I do the crane count every year. We've seen at least two hoopers every year for the last six.
Oh, that is excellent. That is another very, very timely comment. The annual crane count is this Saturday, and we encourage everybody to get out. It's 5:30 in the morning, but again, mm-hmm. you can go out and have coffee with your friends afterwards and talk about the cranes that you've seen and you've heard. And I will mention that Karen Etter-Hale, your guest just previous, is one of our longest crane counters. She's been there from almost the beginning, if not the beginning, and she's the coordinator for Jefferson County.
Yeah, it's really a lot. And where do we go to get, for more information?
For more information on Crane Count, please go to www.cranecount.com. www.crane.org, and you can find information on how to do it, where to do it, how to find your county coordinator and get assigned a place. And it's very easy, and it's a lot of fun.
And it is a lot of fun. And, you know, there's a lot going on in this state. I can tell you right now at 5:30 in the morning, if you haven't been out that early lately, yep, it's worth getting out. It's not
it
only
really
cranes
is.
You're going to hear. You're going to hear a lot of other things. Turkeys right now, too, and across
turkeys,
most of Wisconsin.
Sniper winnowing, the woodcock are out, and all the red-winged blackbirds. It's lovely.
Yeah, lovely. Karen and Randolph, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I was up at the Crane Foundation last summer to see the baby sandhill cranes, or the whooping cranes, and saw the great crown cranes were in Rwanda and Uganda, which we were going to in November, and so was fortunate enough to see them out in the wild.
Oh, lovely.
Just gave me goosebumps. And then this past March, we went out to Nebraska to see the migration along the Platte River, and that was just absolutely incredible.
I can't recommend to anyone who has time to kill in the middle of March, please go to the middle of Nebraska in that time of the year. It is one of the migration spectacles of the world.
Yeah.
And it's right down the road, relative to us in Wisconsin.
Right, right. My parents lived out there, so I had seen them many, many times, but I had never been, in the blinds to see them.
Ah, in the morning, right on the river.
In the morning, yeah. And really recommend, I thought, well, we can just go out there. You have to make reservations ahead of time for both lodging and if you want to go to the blinds.
It's becoming more and more popular, but I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And you're not going to see just five.
No,
tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands of birds in one time.
and the noise is just absolutely incredible.
Yes. Yeah. I liken it to being in a soccer stadium when someone scores a goal because you can't hear. It's just a roar when these birds come off the river all at once. It is astounding.
Yeah. Now, that we didn't see. They didn't come off. They went off in groups, smaller groups. But you go out to the blinds before daybreak, and they are just, you can't see them, but my gosh, you can hear them.
Yes. It is great.
Karen, thank you so much. And I tell you what, you're going to have a chance right here in Wisconsin, and this weekend it'd be a good time to do it. We've got the Crane Count coming up on Saturday, and we're talking about it today with Ann Lacey, long-term crane research coordinator at the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Ann Lacey. You stay with us. So happy to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's a sound you might know. Let's see.
I recognize that.
Our guest, Ann Lacey, knows what that bird song is. It's the sandhill crane.
It's not very musical. They're not the most musical of birds. Not like what you had on the previous segment. But, that's an alarm call.
That's an alarm call for the sandhill crane.
Correct, yeah.
Ann Lacey, our guest, by the way, is the crane research coordinator for the International Crane Foundation. And we're taking a look at the foundation, some of the challenges and opportunities for cranes. Certainly interested in hearing what you have to say. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Maybe you live in an area where they visit. Well, it's hard in here in Wisconsin. They're pretty much everywhere. But I'd love to hear from you. And if you have any photos you've taken of cranes, I hope you'll post them on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. In the meantime, call us at 1-800-642-1234. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And there was a question, a caller earlier had a two-part question, and I failed to ask you again that second part of that question.
It was caller Ann that had a question about DNR and the potential cuts to the science services. And it's not that it would affect the International Crane Foundation that directly, but it affects all of us equally to lose that resource from the state. And we certainly rely on the great information that we get from the Department of Natural Resources. So I would be concerned about it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Peter in Oconomowoc has a question. Hi, or a comment. Hi, Peter. Thanks for calling.
Oh, I have a three-season room with a lot of glass, and we have two cranes in the backyard, and they started last fall and have started again attacking. I guess they're attacking their reflection on the glass, mm-hmm. and they are doing so to the point of injury.
Yes.
We have blood all over the glass. We'll have blood underneath the glass on the patio. I've seen them jump up and try to go after it with their
claws.
Yeah,
with their feet, yeah.
And we're trying to stop it. We put furniture in front of all the windows, and somebody said if you put string out, it'll stop turkeys. So I've tried that too, but now I can't look out my windows because the furniture is all there. I'm wondering,
yes.
is there a way to prevent them from harming themselves and not breaking my windows?
Not breaking the windows or themselves, yeah. It's not going to make you feel any better, but I hear this question a lot. It's basically outsmarting them. It is likely that they are seeing their reflection. Cranes are highly territorial, and they want to see that other pair of cranes out of their territory. Removing that reflection is the way to solve that problem. So you're going about it the right. It's either physically blocking it, putting up sheets. It's not going to be pretty. The fix is not easy, but you need to make it so that they do not want to be there.
The isn't there? If I'm not mistaken, there's a sort of a mesh that still allows you to see out the window, but the mesh hangs down in front of the window and mm-hmm. takes that glare away.
Yeah. It might not take the glare away. I think it's to keep songbirds from colliding into large glass mm-hmm. windows. And that might physically at least keep them away. But then you saw them jumping up, and we call that jump raking, where they take their claws and they can actually mm-hmm. eviscerate.
Yeah.
So that might not work with the bird netting, or it might. But it's a physical barrier, taking away that reflection, Keith. I'm sorry, Peter. That is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Do we think those are the same birds returning?
Yes. Yep. They are territorial, so they will come back to that same spot year after year.
Year after year.
Yes. yes. They're right. Glorious creatures, aren't they?
I would think hanging that mesh would.
It's
would
worth
have
a try.
It would have to cut the.
The reflection,
I would think.
It's worth a try.
Yeah,
it's worth a
definitely
try.
Worth a try. And you can get that.
Yeah, bird stores.
Birds, any of the birding stores will have
if
that.
If nothing else, it'll keep small songbirds that might also crash into your patio doors. So it's worth doing.
Yeah, it definitely is. Peter, thanks for calling. Good luck. Max in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Max.
Well, good afternoon. I'm so glad that you have this guest on today. And my question for you is, I live in Milwaukee here, and I've not been able to get to the Platte River yet, but I've been trying to see, you know, as many cranes as possible here in Wisconsin. Didn't have too much luck at Nisida last year. Mm-hmm. And so I guess my question is, what area, close to Milwaukee hopefully, would be the best spot to go and see these cranes? People have said Horicon.
Horicon is an option. Of course, the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, Wisconsin, you can see them up close and actually learn a lot about the science of them and see their behaviors, too. Short of that, seeing wild cranes, Horicon is a good spot. But again, Nisida is beautiful for whooping cranes and santo cranes and loads of other birds and waterfowl. But they're big, wide open, wild spaces. So...
Yeah.
You may or may not see them. In the fall, you'll be able to see large groups of birds flocking, and so fall is always a good time. October, when those cornfields come down, just like we had a previous caller describe, along Highway 16 between Portage and the Dells, Horicon, Mud Lake area in Dodge County, a lot of sandhill cranes use that area in the fall.
Yeah.
So you're saying that fall is actually a better time than spring?
Yeah, nesting season, you know, they're paired up, they're in wetlands, they're the same color as the wetlands, so they're hard to see. And in the fall, you'll see large flocks of them, and they'll make themselves pretty obvious.
And can you tell me, is there the best time of day? Would it be like dawn or dusk, or is there no best time to see them?
They're out all day. Before they'll come out of roost early in the morning. They roost in water, and they'll come out to eat right at sunrise, and they stay out all day. But early morning is just always a really good time.
Yeah.
Okay, then one last question. You don't know, I mean, Horicon Marsh is a very big place, so you wouldn't have any idea what portion, the west side, the east side, north side, south side?
I'd stop in at the DNR Center there and ask.
Both visitor centers. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, the center is really good, and just say, look, I'm really interested in the Sandhills. They're going to know, believe me.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the info.
Yep.
Thanks again.
You bet.
And frankly, that it's worth a stop at that center anyways. It's a beautiful center.
It is.
Yeah. Bernie in Wauwatosa, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love the cranes. They're amazing, just unbelievable. They're prehistoric to me. And I have been to the Crane Foundation many times, but I have a question regarding the pod where you have all the pairs of cranes.
Yes.
Of different species.
Mm-hmm.
Do they ever get out? Because I kind of stopped going there because they kind of come up to you and look at you like, let me out. And I'm wondering, do you switch pairs or what's the deal?
They don't get out on... sometimes accidentally we might have a bird escape, but it is... A rare occurrence, and it is definitely an accident. These are captive birds that need to remain in captivity for their safety and, quite honestly, for the safety of our visitors. And so,
I guess my question is, it's kind of like a zoo thing, you know, where the animals are in captivity all the time. Why do you keep them to do testing on them, or, because they're all the different species?
Yeah. So the birds in our captive collection serve many purposes, and they're not just, you know, to serve human needs. That is very much for the species survival in many cases. So we have many, many captive whooping cranes that contribute genetics to the increasing the reintroduction that we have here in Wisconsin, but also increasing the genetic variability of birds in captivity and in the wild. The birds that we have on display are very much for education. So it is true we are actually a member, an accredited member of the American Zoo Association, and that is very stringent. And so we take that very, very seriously. And so we have aviculturists on staff. They're highly professional individuals, and we put a lot of stock in keeping those birds happy and healthy, even though they are in captivity. And our future plans are to have those kind of smallish enclosures, opening them up, and much like our whooping crane exhibit on site, to have very naturalistic open exhibits where they have water and they have, you know, dirt to dig around in and be more like wild cranes.
Yeah, the other space that you mentioned is really beautiful.
Yeah. Then there's no you can't see a fence. There's no top on it. So they look like birds out in the wild. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, very beautiful place. Bernie, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, let's listen to a hooper here for a minute. We haven't heard the hooper yet, so.
Very different from the sandhill crane. Another alarm call.
Yeah, that's another alarm call, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so kind of nice to be able to hear the difference.
Yeah.
You can easily tell the difference between the two.
Yep.
Mary in Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have an anecdote to share about sandhill cranes.
Mm-hmm.
Down in Florida, at least in the Tampa area, they'll just walk up in people's backyards. I mean,
yes.
A lot of the backyards have ponds behind them. They're
used to people. Yep, they can.
They're very used to people.
Yeah.
Anyways, we were visiting a friend. One came calling one day, and he said, "Oh, it wants some bread." And he said, "Take this. This is the stale bread." Well, I wasn't thrilled about this, but anyway, so I tossed the sandhill crane some stale bread, and it picked it up and kind of checked it out and decided this was, you know, too crunchy.
So, such discerning
so
taste.
Still holding the bread in its beak, it walked down to the pond and it dunked it in. And then after it was soaked, he just went up and, I can't tell the males from the females.
He made it palatable.
Gobbled it down.
And guzzled it down. So they sound like they're stupid when they're crashing against glass, but
they're pretty smart.
Yes, yep.
They're pretty smart.
He knew that that was food, but it wasn't quite right. And, you know, they might do that with natural foods as well to rinse dirt off, although they don't look like they really mind a bit of dirt on their food. But they knew what to do to make it palatable for them. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. That's a great story. I appreciate it. Chris in Wisconsin, maybe Wisconsin Dells? Wisconsin Dells. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I have a suggestion for everybody that's got birds crashing into windows. My parents have these huge, huge plate glass windows, and they were having, because they have an amazing garden, and they were having a lot of trouble with songbirds like crashing into their windows. I went out and bought them a bunch of leaded windows, and they hung them on the inside of the house, and they're pretty, and they're simple, and the birds have figured out that they can't fly through the leaded windows, and so they're not having that problem anyway, and you don't have to, like, hang ugly mesh on the outside of your house. You can just do this pretty thing on the inside and take care of the problem.
So leaded glass windows.
Yeah, just plain leaded, you know, they don't have to be complicated or anything, and you can still look through your windows because they're, you know, but the birds have figured out that they can't fly through your windows.
I hope Peter is listening there. That's a functional and attractive solution.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the call. All right. What about you? Do you have a question or comment? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Facebook comment from Ann. Wonderful place, the International Crane Foundation. My young granddaughters enjoyed their visit to last year's Crane Fest event in August. Lots of fun things to do and learn. It's a must-see place.
Excellent. Yes, we have so many great events. We have a wonderful education staff and naturalists that will lead you around and tell about all of our work worldwide and all the cranes that you're seeing, or you can do a self-guided tour. They have nature trails. The prairie is changing week to week, month to month. It's a lovely, lovely place, and it's open today.
It's open today. Today's the first day, so it's perfect. Ann Lacey, our guest, Crane Research Coordinator at the International Crane Foundation. What do you do? What does a Crane Research Coordinator do?
What does that mean? I concentrate mostly on cranes here in Wisconsin, so sandhill cranes and the whooping crane reintroduction. So I have a crew of people that are out there, great interns that are out getting information on the sandhill cranes, because just because a bird is not endangered doesn't mean it might not be, and doesn't mean that it doesn't cause problems, as even people today are noticing. So we do research on sandhills, making that success story remain successful, and we apply those things that we've learned to birds around the world that, you know, there's crop damage in Africa, for example, and helping people there. And again, there's that reintroduction in Wisconsin with the whooping cranes and really trying to make that a success. Slow but sure.
Slow but sure. Yeah, it takes time. John and Shano, thanks for calling. Hi.
Oh, hi. That was very, very quick. off your... Hey, up here in Shawano, you know, seasonally, of course, we see quite a few sandhills. We're very, very close to the Navarino Nature Preserve, where it seems like a really good spot for them to... my three quick questions. Number one, I'm sorry I didn't catch the entire show. Where do they migrate from? Where do they winter? And I was really curious about what altitude they fly at, since how long their migration is. What altitude do they fly at? And then real quick at the end, if you have time, I heard a little while ago. Are people trying to make get them to be a game animal? And if so, I wouldn't be shooting any. But what the heck would they taste like? They look kind of stringy.
I am told all the time that they taste very good. So there's that. Yes, people have been hunting them in the central flyway of the United States for decades, and they're sustainably hunted there. And again, people say that they taste quite nice. I do not know. They are hunted in two states in the eastern flyway, so that's where our birds here in Wisconsin migrate generally southeast. Historically, they have gone all the way to Florida, but here's one of the research projects that I'm working on, Larry, is really defining the expansion of this population. They now breed all the way through New England and up into Quebec, and they migrate south. Some don't even bother to go all the way to Florida anymore. Some winter in Indiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, even Louisiana and Mississippi. So that's where they generally go to from here. And they can fly at 2,000 feet. So they can take some of those thermals and they just go up, 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 up. And then they scoot off of those thermals and coast until they hit another one and go back up. And so they can fly many hundreds of miles in a day.
Well, wonderful. Am I still on?
Yes, you are.
Sorry, that was abrupt.
fantastic. What a knowledgeable guest. Three quick questions and three very good, concise answers. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. And to be perfectly honest, I have tasted cranes, and I did it without even knowing I was doing it. I was at a get-together, which was a wild game dinner, and this was a... I thought, what's this? And I tried it, and somebody said, well, that's a crane, a sandhill crane. I said, what? And had actually been harvested in the Dakotas, I think, or someplace,
yep. Mm-hmm.
And brought back to Wisconsin.
Sure.
So it wasn't illegal, but it's kind of a meaty beef.
Yeah,
more like a dark chicken.
Meat.
Yeah, very dark meat, much more like beef than what you a chicken, for example, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit different.
Like geese, they have very, very dark dark meat.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very, very dark meat. So there you have it. Tastes the consistency of beef more.
I'll take your word for it, Larry.
Well, it was quite a surprise to me, I can tell you that. Stuart in Germantown, your turn. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, I just wanted to say that about a year and a half ago, we were up at the Horicon Marsh and saw a bunch of cars stop and looked out into a field, and there were some recently released whooping cranes, as I believe. And
Absolutely.
One of the Crane Foundation vans was there trying to keep the cranes from crossing the road.
Yes.
And it was a beautiful sight.
Except for the part where they cross the road. Yeah, they have these giant wings, and they insist on walking. But... yes, that is part of the International Crane Foundation's, one of our contributions to the whooping crane reintroduction is a specific program called Direct Autumn Release. And we're working with our partners over in Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And that is where they're raised for the second half of their pre-flight life. And so then they learn to fly at Horicon, and then they're released in the company of older birds, which is preferable, if not sandhills, and they learn the migration route from older adults. And so I'm so glad you got to see them. That was great.
Yeah, thanks.
Once on the way home from work, there were two cranes crossing the road. I think they were sandhills. They had a little red plume on their head.
Mm-hmm. Yep, red skin.
And they had two little babies.
Ah, so they couldn't fly. They won't fly if they have the little ones that don't fly. So they have to cross the road. Be careful out there, everybody. They won't get out of your way.
And they, you wouldn't want to be bothering with those babies too much because you're going to...
Oh, yep. Remember the screen door? That could be you.
yeah, yep. You would not want to fool around with them. Well, thank you so much, Stuart, for your question and your comment. Dave in Germantown had a place where you can find cranes near Milwaukee, but you're going to find, and I'm sorry we're out of time, we're not going to be able to take that,
yeah.
But maybe, Dave, maybe you can post that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'll go back to that later on. In the meantime, International Crane Foundation in Baraboo is open for business today.
Oh, stop by, please. Yep, and go to our website, savingcranes.org, and you can see all of the work that we do worldwide, but you can see the... multitude of events that we have throughout the year and pick one and come on up. That would be great to see you. And count cranes this weekend.
Oh, yeah. And some cool T-shirts and stuff up there,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, we have a web store. If you can't make it up, we do have a web store.
Oh, very much fun talking with Ann Lacy, Crane Research Coordinator for the International Crane Foundation, and fun having you listening in today. We'll talk about digital photography tomorrow with Jack Socha, and then we got some food. Terry Milligan, our chef, her favorite recipes for spring. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.